You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Larry Hardesty in for Chris Carlin. We take the baton from Michael Kay and Don LaGreca, another stellar edition of the Michael Kay Show. Four great hours, and we just hope to continue and keep the ball rolling. 1-800-919-3776. That's the number to join our conversation this evening. We'll talk with Rich Cimini at the bottom of the hour. Jets and Jamal Adams, part 55. We'll talk about that at the bottom of the hour. A little later in the show, we'll be joined by Christian Whitfield on the Nets, because I've got a little concern about them after seeing, I'm just trying to figure out how they're going to get any offense when they go to the postseason. And I know the scrimmage was, you know, just that, but still, got some questions. Let's see if Christian Whitfield of the Daily News can answer them for you. But in the beginning, I'm in a good mood right now. And listen, for those of you who listen to me on ESPN New York Tonight, you know I have this, I'm a Met fan, you know I have this roller coaster ride with my club. It's a team that, when you talk about them, it's a bunch of, well, if Cespedes can stay healthy and hit, if Jacob deGrom can be the Cy Young Award winner he's been the past 2 years, if the bullpen can do, it's always if. Okay, it's not that confidence, just me. It's not that confidence that you have when you follow other teams, right? It's things have to go in a certain way for you to feel comfortable and confident about your club. Now, I realize that when it comes to the Mets and opening day, I think our Dan Grasso said the best. Death taxes in the Mets on opening day. It's been a given. The Mets are going to perform well on opening day. They just do. So you had that in your back pocket, right? But still you were wondering what was going to happen. Because I've been talking about how well this offense should work with McNeil and Alonso and Conforto and Cespedes and, well, Cano got a hit today, so I'm feeling a little better. And the rest of the lineup. Well, Ramos, what is this lineup going to look? They should be able to put runs on the board. And so I'm looking at this and I'm saying, okay, we got questions about the starting rotation now with, you know, Stroman out. And so the Mets are going to have to score some runs to help take pressure off the starters and off the bullpen. And I've got Jacob deGrom going today. And as a Mets fan, that's like the Yankee fans having Gerrit Cole going. You know there's a great chance you're going to win that game. You have to win. And for the Mets, you have to win in this shortened season when deGrom is on the mound. You just have to. And so I'm thinking, you know, they'll do well. They'll be able to put 3-4 runs on the board for him. And we're off and running. Look, I know Soroka pitches well. I know he pitched well today. And then it's like Gary Cohen said. Nothing's changed. DeGrom pitches, Mets can't hit. And that was the case today. So it's 0-0. And as I'm getting to the seventh, I'm thinking, oh, we got a shot here where we might see a runner on second going extra innings. We got a shot here. I'm curious about how this is going to work, and I'm curious about managerial moves and stuff like that. And then the seventh inning comes up, and Cespedes sends one probably to one of those garages, you know, just off of Queens Boulevard. And that's what you want. As a Met fan, that's what you expect from Cespedes in a DH year. That's what he brings to the table. That's what you want from him. And if he can execute that for you, you're feeling good. You're feeling like, you know what? That's what we need from him. This is an opportunity for us to keep his bat in the lineup. Keep his bat in the lineup and not have to worry about, well, you know, what's his condition in the field? Are we going to have to pull him in late innings? Have to have a defensive replacement, so on and so forth, and then you lose that bat. So, Mets up 1-0. And now you're thinking, oh, it's the bullpen. What's the bullpen going to do? Lugo comes in, 3 strikeouts in 2 innings, 1 hit. And, you know, Lugo's Lugo, who ends up getting the win, by the way. Justin Wilson comes in, 1 inning, 2 strikeouts. I'm good. Now Diaz is coming in the ninth. And okay, I'm going to admit to you, I'm squirming. I'm very uncomfortable. I'm concerned. Now, should I just say, oh, let me wait and see what's going on here and give him a chance? Yes, I should. You're right. Did I? No. And when Freddie Freeman's bomb went foul, upper deck, right field, I cannot repeat what I said. And I apologize to Edwin Diaz right now. Because it wasn't nice. How could you come in and... Anyway, it was foul. And Diaz settled down, did the job, couple of strikeouts, had a walk. But listen, got the job done. Mets win 1-0, so I'm good. I'm good. And if I can get that type of... And I know I'm not, okay? But if I can get relatively close to the bullpen production that I got today, which was 4 innings, 2 hits, and 7 strikeouts. Close. I know I'm not getting 7 strikeouts. I understand that. But if I can get that type of production where I only get 1 walk, where you've got limited people on base, this Met team will definitely make the postseason. I'm just telling you, they will. If you can get that type of consistency done from the bullpen, because I know they will be able to score runs. I still think the pitchers are ahead of the hitters. They usually are the first week of the season. I know that's the case. But I think the bats are going to come around. And so I think this lineup has the potential of being a really potent, efficient lineup. I do. And you get the starters to do what they can do. And you get the bullpen to give you something similar to what they gave you today. And I think the Mets are in good shape. I really do. What do you think? 1-800-919-3776. Your thoughts. You can also reach me via Twitter at Hardesty ESPN at ESPNNY98_7FM. A couple other things that we'll talk about this evening. So, and I'll reserve my comments about Jamal Adams when we chat with Rich Cimini at the bottom of the hour. So all this time we've been told, moving to the NBA, that it's Tom Thibodeau's job to lose. And all this time we've been told that Tibbs begging for this job. Tibbs wants to be the head coach. Tibbs is the guy. Tibbs wants this. Tibbs has been begging for this. He wanted it before Fizdale. He wanted it, Mike Miller. He wants the job. He wants it. He wants it. He wants it. Now, according to published reports, Jason Kidd is the number one contender now because they can't come to a contract talks with Tom Thibodeau. I guess he didn't really want the job as bad as we thought, huh? Now, according to the article, it's the amount of years, and I understand he wants some, you know, he wants some longevity. And honestly, if I'm James Dolan, I don't want to lock up a bunch of years with my head coach in case they don't do the job. Because then I have to end up firing them. And then I have to end up paying them. So, hey, guess what? You want to prove to me that you can get this job done and turn this team around? Then sign a low, and I don't know how many, the number of years they're talking about. I don't know. But let's say 2-3 years. Oh, yeah. Okay, I want a 5-year deal. No, I'll give you a 3-year deal. You got 3 years to turn this around. And if you're doing a great job, we can talk extension. I got no problem talking extension. But I'm not getting into a long-term contract with you. 5-6 years. Hypothetically, I'm not getting into a long-term contract with you. And then I got to pay you when you don't do your job. I've got a bunch of people I've just done that with. So if I'm James Dolan, I am concerned about that. And I understand it. I do. Prove to me that you can turn this team around. I'm not just giving money away again. Just had a bad situation with Phil Jackson. Okay, just had a bad situation with David Fizdale that I had to pay. So, you know, if that's the case, if that's one of the stumbling blocks, then I'm sure they'll work that out. to a number of Knicks fans who aren't real excited about Tom Thibodeau being the next head coach of the Knicks, you're happy anyway. You're like, I don't want him anyway. Jason Kidd is now the front runner. And here's the concern I have. There's two. Number one is, and I don't know all the details around his two coaching stops with the Nets and Milwaukee. But I will tell you, he's become the new Larry Brown in the sense that he doesn't stay anywhere. So that would be a concern for me, number one. Because if I've got a younger coach, okay, I want this coach to grow with the players that I bring him. I've got young coach, I've got young players, I want them to grow together. So that's one concern, okay. The second concern I have is that his name has been attached to the work that he was able to do with Giannis Antetokounmpo. That's a concern for me because that sounds like you think that he'll be able to bring Giannis here when Giannis is a free agent. I'm not playing that game anymore. Okay, as a Knicks fan, I don't want to hear that game. I don't want that play. I don't want to hear this. Well, I can bring... No. I've been bamboozled and fooled before. I'm not trying to hear that stuff again. I'm just not. I'm not trying to hear this coach can bring me somebody. This coach can bring a, he can attract free agents. Yeah, okay, sure. I'm not buying it. I'm just not. I'm not buying that that's the way it's going to go. Because I've been standing at the altar and there's no brides. So if that's the reason why you're bringing Jason Kidd in here, I'm saying that's not the reason to bring him in. The next head coach of the Knicks should be a basketball guy who knows how to develop and build a team. Great X's and O's and great fundamentals. That's what you want in a head coach. A coach that can scheme, a coach who can game plan. That's what you need. And then also in the published report about the idea that the Knicks would be able to help pick his coaches, I'm saying, listen, if you're Jason Kidd, if I'm Jason Kidd, I want to bring my crew in. I don't need you to help pick my team for me. I know who I want to bring in.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
We bring in the dean of the Jet Reporters, the top pilot on the Flight Deck podcast on ESPN.com. He is, of course, Rich Cimini. Hi, Rich.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for that intro.
You're welcome, sir. How's everything?
Oh, good. Getting ready. I guess we have football now. You know, as of
about
an hour or so ago, everything official between the union and the league. And football starts next week.
Well,
hopefully it finishes.
Exactly. Really. So we know it's going to start. But one thing that has not just started has been the war of words between Jamal Adams and the Jets. Rich, it's very clear. Jamal Adams doesn't want to be here anymore. So what? And he's trying to bully his way out with the comments that he's making. But here's the bottom line. The Jets still own his rights. They're not going to just give him away. So, I mean, I don't know what his strategy is here because it's clear he doesn't want to be here anymore. So what's the next step for both sides?
Well, the next step for both sides is on Tuesday when I believe, you know, training camp, you know, the players have to report to take their COVID-19 tests. Jamal is going to be there. You know, he said he'll report to training camp. You know, I don't think there was really much doubt about a holdout because under the new CBA, the penalties for a holdout are really severe. I mean, $40,000 a day fine and you lose your accrued season, which is a big deal. So he'll be there. Now, how he comports himself in training camp is another story. We've heard stories in the past about players faking injuries just to show how disgruntled they are and not participating. So I don't know. I mean, that doesn't sound like something what Jamal would do. He's usually a pretty competitive and prideful player. So, but you just never know. I mean, he's going to be here unhappy. And if you're the Jets, what I would do if I were the GM is I would just make him play. Like you said, Larry, you've got his rights for two more years. plus franchise tags after that. So I would just make them play. And unless I get blown away by an offer, you know, I'm not trading the guy.
It's an interesting scenario here, Rich. And look, let's be fair. We understand that from his standpoint, he feels that he's outplayed his contract and he wants more money. I get it. Everybody wants more money. National Football League, I get it even more than most sports. But here's the thing in this scenario, Rich, I'm not sure that even more money is going to make him happy because he just seems like he wants out of here. It's not, I don't know if it's the fact that the team's not winning. I don't know if it's, you know, a combination of not being, he had to be happy with the way he was used last year. His stats were phenomenal. They jumped off the charts, but it just seems like he's done with the Jets. So if he's done with the Jets, then, you know, just be quiet and hopefully you'll be able to get moved, because by you talking, you're killing your trade value on both sides. You're killing it from the Jets' standpoint, Rich, because, you know, it's like, oh, they have to get rid of him, so I'm not going to offer a first-round pick for him. And from his standpoint, if you're another team, you're like, so this is how he's going to act when I have to redo his contract again? So he's killing both sides.
Yeah. In fact, I talked to a couple of people around the league who mentioned that to me, saying that while Jamal thinks he's, you know, accomplishing something by trying to force the Jets' hand, he's actually hurting his marketability. And I know for a fact the Jets have relayed that sentiment to Jamal's agent, which I don't think went over well in that conversation. But, so it's a really interesting situation. I mean, I think he has outplayed his rookie contract, and he's clearly the best player on the team. So, you know, I can understand where he's coming from. He wants to be the highest paid guy on the team. He's probably looking for about $17 million a year. The thing, you know, I see where the Jets are coming from, too, because very rarely do defensive players who are former first-round picks get new deals after only 3 years. It's only happened four times since 2011 when the current system went into effect. The Jets do not want to make that exception for him, and I understand that. And there's also the uncertainty with the salary cap because of the COVID pandemic. So I get where the Jets are coming from. The part I would criticize the Jets on, and just from talking to people in both camps, I think maybe the Jets have not been as upfront with Jamal as they should have been. Jamal is under the impression that the Jets promised an offer in January. And he claims that offer has never come. And if the Jets, and I don't know, you'd have to be in the room or on the phone to know whether that is in fact a true statement. But if the Jets were misleading him at any point across along the way, then I can understand his frustration.
Rich Simini is my guest. You're listening to Carlin, Hardesty in for Chris on 98.7 ESPN. Rich, here's the other part of this that's also fascinating is that he is their best player, as we both acknowledge. And the Jets have not really hit the lottery a lot in their draft choices. This is one that they did. And you really kind of want to sign and keep and reward your players to even get a second contract, which has not been the case with this team.
Yeah, I think very rarely do the Jets actually have a first round pick who gets to a second contract. And, I mean, I don't know if this is – I think Mo Wilkerson might be the only one in recent years to accomplish that. And we all know how that turned out. Yeah. You know, that turned out to be a disastrous second contract. And, you know, they paid 30-something million for that and didn't get much back. So, yeah, I mean, he was a really good draft pick. And you want to – that's how you build championship teams. You know, you draft well and you keep those players. And somewhere along the line, and I really think this stems to the trading deadline last year when that controversy erupted. I think a trust was broken, and I think Jamal felt betrayed there, that his name got leaked out in trade talks. And, you know, they say they patched it up at the time, but I don't think they really did. I think that just scarred the relationship, and I don't think they've been able to put it back together. And I think Jamal's had it in his mind going back to last October that he was either going to get a contract extension from this team or get the hell out of town. And so I think when he realized he wasn't getting that extension, you know, he just decided, I got to get myself out of here.
Rich, I know the fans have not been endeared with Adam Gase after his first season. But as you've been around that locker room, what do the players think of him? Are they, from what they've led on to you, what's the feeling about him? Do they agree with what Jamal Adams said in his article today, that he's not a leader, he's not the guy that can take this team to the next level?
Yeah, my one comment on that is, you know, this is the first time he criticized Gase. If he was so down on Gase, you know, why didn't he request a trade after the season? You know, in fact, on January 29th, he tweeted out how much he wanted to be in New York. You know, he said, I want to be in New York. So evidently he was willing to play under Adam Gase as of January 29th. And then the mood changed when the contract talks never materialized. So getting back to Gase, you know, is he the most beloved coach I've ever covered? No, I would not say that. And I think some of what Jamal said in the story is actually true. You know, he does delegate a lot to his assistant coaches, and he is not the kind of guy to get up in front of the team meeting every day and just give a, you know, like a rousing pep talk. And I think he defers a lot to Greg Williams and even guys like Joe Vitt, who's, you know, been around forever, an assistant coach who's kind of a fiery guy. So some of what he said is true. Adam is essentially, you know, the head coach of the offense, and Greg Williams is the head coach of the defense. I don't particularly care for that structure. We've seen it a little with the Jets before. Rex Ryan, to some mm-hmm. degree, had that same kind of dynamic. And, you know, I don't really care for it. I'm more of a traditionalist, but this is the way the Jets operate. And honestly, from what I've been told, Jamal and Adam have never had any, like, cross words with each other. They've never had a negative interaction. There's never been an argument or anything like that. So I do think some of what Jamal is saying is true about Adam, based on what I've gathered from other players. But at this point, I think he's just reaching for reasons. Look at what he's done in the last 3 days. I mean, he criticized Woody Johnson on Twitter, and in, you know, today he criticized Douglas and Adam Gase. I mean, who's left? I mean, he's just you know, he's firing away here, just trying to create a situation that forces the Jets to trade him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and listen, be careful where you get traded to. You know, it may not be the team that's on your list. That's the other issue here.
Yeah, I mean, he is hoping to get permission from the Jets to speak to teams directly. Now, we'd have to be naive to think that, you know, his agent hasn't been talking to teams directly on his own without permission. I'm certain he has. But the Jets necessarily, you're right, they don't have to give that permission. They could keep control of the situation and, you know, and do a deal with, I don't know, the Carolina Panthers, you know, and mm-hmm. send them there. And which he'd probably object to. So yeah, there's just a lot of different ways and different layers to this whole situation where it can go. But I think the next thing that happens, you know, so he'll show up next week, and, you know, he won't be happy, but he'll show up and go through training camp trying to, you know, continue this trade momentum. But I do not believe the Jets are actively trying to trade the player. I think they'd really have to be blown away by it. I think their intention is to play this out. And Joe Douglas looks weak if he trades him right now.
Absolutely.
Because he's not going to get back what he could have gotten if they traded him before the draft. So mm-hmm. he looks like a novice GM if he does that now. So if I were him, I would just ride this out at least until the end of the preseason and see where things are then.
Rich, one last thing. Is this the accusations, the comments attributed to Woody Johnson, is this going to be a distraction during training camp, do you think?
You know, that's a really good question. Well, we know this much. Woody's not around the team. He's in London. He's been in London for 3 years. None of the players, other than Brian Winters, who's the longest tenured Jet, none of the players have even played under Woody when Woody was the owner on a day-to-day basis. So on the other side, you know, you don't want the guy who's signing your checks, so to speak, making racial comments. And so that, I mean, if it's proven that he said it, now there's an investigation still ongoing.
Yep.
The State Department is going to release a report at some point, who knows when, but they'll release a report with their findings. And if it's proven that he did make racially insensitive comments, then he should be held accountable. And then I think there would be a backlash in the locker room. And no owner in any professional league can successfully lead a franchise with that stain on his record. That would be extremely difficult from a business perspective. I mean, you might have corporate sponsors bailing out on the team, and then you might have players just bailing out, you know. So that bears watching. It's going to be really hard to monitor that training camp because we won't even have access to the players anymore, you know, of the COVID restrictions. So it's going to be really hard to monitor something like that, but it definitely bears watching.
Rich, I hope this is not Jamal Adams doesn't give you, I'm going to see if you remember this, I'm going to take you back a little bit, a Pete Kendall, Eric Mangini type of disagreement for training camp for you.
You know, that's a great point. That was 2006 when Pete Kendall basically every day in training camp complained to the media about money that he felt the Jets owed him. And it happened under Eric Mangini's watch, you know, and it had to drive Mangini nuts, but he let Kendall speak to the media every day, and he just ripped the organization every day. And I've actually thought of that the last couple of days, but like I just said a minute ago, we're not going to be having access to the players in person. Yeah, I mean, everything we have access to will be on a Zoom call, and the Jets may not even make them all available, you know. Uh-huh. So you know, I don't think we'll have a repeat of the Pete Kendall situation, but it's certainly good for a laugh and some reminiscing.
I just want to put a smile on your face, Rich. Just wanted to get you ready for training camp, my friend.
Yeah, that was one of the more bizarre camps. And P.S., they ended up trading him.
That's right.
Right before the season to Washington. So as much as they said, you know, no, we're not trying to trade him, you know, they turned around and trade him because they wanted to eliminate that distraction. The difference was Pete Kendall was just a guard and really wasn't the best player on the team. Jamal's the best player on the team. A little different situation.
Absolutely. You can read more. Keep up to date what's going on at training camp with the Jets. Rich Cimini via the Flight Deck podcast and also his writing on ESPN.com. Rich, always a pleasure, my friend. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Larry. Take care.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Right now, we turn our attention to the National Basketball Association and the New York Nets out of Brooklyn. Christian Winfield covers the Nets for the Daily News, joins us now here on 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Christian, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well, Larry. How's everything going on your end?
Everything is going well, my friend. Thanks for joining me this evening. Now, you acknowledge that the Nets showed major rust in their first scrimmage against Orlando. Christian, I understand there was no Jamal Crawford. There were a couple of people missing. Christian, how are they going to find other people to give them offense without Caris LeVert?
You know, it's tough. And part of it, you want to attribute it to the rust. Obviously, Caris goes out there and shoots 0-for-6 from 3. Timothée Luwawu-Cabarrot is another guy who the Nets are expecting to give them some production behind the three-point line. He went 1-for-6. So when you've got two of your sharpshooters going 1-for-12 from three, you really don't stand a chance. But look at it. Joe Harris didn't play because they want to manage everyone's load coming back. You've got Jamal Crawford coming in. We're seeing Tyler Johnson come in as well. This is a team that we knew would be shorthanded, and they were even more shorthanded in their first scrimmage. So I think they're hoping that some fresh bodies and some fresh legs might be able to help them out.
Christian, what's the balance for Jacques Vaughn? Obviously, you want to manage people's minutes, but you also, because of the fact that you're going to have people playing not with the same folks who they've played with before, there's chemistry issues that you need to have so you get some familiarity. What's that thin line he's got to balance there?
You know, that's a great question. You know, I think Jacques is trying to make sure, you know, you look at a guy like Jamal Crawford, who's 40 years old, about to be playing basketball for the first time since last April. He's trying to make sure a lot of these guys are being eased along. But at the same time, it's just like you mentioned, you know, you've only got two more scrimmage games until these wins and losses start to matter. So I think we're going to see the team pick it up a little bit. The Nets are happy to welcome along a couple new players. We're going to see Dante Hall. We're not going to see Dante Hall in the next game. He's not going to play in the scrimmage. And that's really what it's going to boil down to. A lot of the guys that we're talking today were like, hey, we know that we've got communication issues because there's a lot of guys who aren't accustomed to playing with one another, and not even with one another, but there's a lot of guys that haven't, A, either haven't been playing basketball all year, or B, haven't been playing basketball since March. So it's going to take some time for these guys to get their stride, but I think they will, and I think eventually you're going to see some semblance of Nets basketball like we're used to seeing.
Dante Hall is much needed, because the other thing that jumps out at you is the lack of size on this team.
And, right.
And you know, the thing that you see with Jacques Vaughn is he wants to, and you understand it, he wants to push the basketball. He wants to get into a transition. He wants to make sure that he gets his offense set before the opposition's defense. Can right. he have enough three-point makers, though, to do that? Because otherwise, you know, when you get beat off the boards, it goes the other way.
Yeah, it does. And I think what's interesting about the way the Nets roster is constructed right now is they've got potential to have five shooters on the floor at all times. We saw yesterday, Rodion Skurucs this season is a 38% three-point shooter. Dante Hall is a guy who hit in the G League about 27% of his threes. And, you know, for a guard, 27% isn't that high. But for a big man to shoot, he shot about 7 of 27 from 3 in the G League, so that shows you he's comfortable shooting that shot. I think the Nets have the capability to spread the ball out and really start getting some of these shots up. It's just a matter of who's going to be available. Are you going to put Joe Harris at the 4? I hope not, because that's probably a recipe for disaster. So they're going to be undersized. They understand that. It's kind of be like Rockets light. You know, you've got the Rockets out west who are running P.J. Tucker at the center, and you got James Harden and Russell Westbrook and everyone else is a shooter out there. The Nets may have the capability to do something similar. It's just a matter of them not being able to have the talent in terms of two MVP caliber people like James Harden and Russell Westbrook that are not suited up for the Nets right now.
Christian, there's two players that actually intrigue me. One is Garrett Temple, who a solid guy, veteran, a leader. Every time you see these interviews, he's you know, he's in the forefront. He's obviously one of the leaders on the team. And Chris Chioza is a fascinating player for me out of Florida. Tell me about these guys.
Garrett Temple is, I think, first and foremost, forget about basketball. Garrett Temple is as quality of a human being as you'll find. Not only is he one of the vice presidents of the NBPA, but he's just a really well-rounded guy that a lot of Nets players look to as a veteran in this locker room. He's going to be very important as one of the elder statesmen in the locker room. When you look at DeAndre Jordan, who's not available, Wilson Chandler not available, guys are going to be leaning on him just as much as they'd be leaning on Jamal Crawford. These guys have immense amounts of experience just playing and winning basketball games. And a guy like Chris Chioza, he's a dog. He's out there to play. He's out there to compete. And what he showed us in the first half, or in the latter stretch of the season before the NBA shut down, is that he can shoot the ball and he can pass that thing. And when you've got need in the backcourt because of Spencer Dinwiddie's absence, those are two things that you want. So the Nets are obviously a team that are going to go as Caris LeVert goes and as Jared Allen is able to take them. But guys like Garrett Temple and Chris Chioza are going to be immensely important for how deep this team is able to grow.
Christian Winfield covers the Nets and the NBA, Knicks as well, for the Daily News. He's my guest. You're listening to Carlin. Larry Horsley filling in on 98.7 ESPN. All right, Christian, what's this about Zach LaVine? What am I hearing about him either going to the Knicks or the Nets? So since you cover both, give me both angles.
Well, I mean, from the Nets perspective, we can tackle that one first. You know, Bradley Beal is the guy who the Nets want, right? Last year, if you can put any big three of potential attainable guys together, and you've got Kyrie and you've got KD, you want Bradley Beal. You want the guy who's able to get you 50 at a moment's notice and compete on the defensive end. But Zach LaVine is not a bad consolation prize. He's a guy who can go out there. We saw him go pretty crazy against the Charlotte Hornets earlier that season when he put the Bulls on his back and got that comeback win. I think he went for 50 or so at that point. And that's kind of what the Nets need at this point. We see that Kyrie Irving is not he's not going to be a guy who's going to be able to go out there and get you 82 games, right? He might. This year, he only got you 20. Kevin Durant is a guy who we don't even know the status of his Achilles. So I think right now the Nets are looking for someone who'll be able to take on that offensive load. We still don't know if it's Caris LeVert. The Nets are hoping that that's the guy. But at the end of the day, they want that bona fide third star. And as for the Knicks, I'm not sure why they would be targeting a guy like Zach LaVine. And it's not because of Zach LaVine. I think the Knicks are a team that needs to just completely reset, rebuild through the draft, acquire picks, develop that talent, which means hiring a guy like Kenny Atkinson, who's known for developing those young players and not skip any steps in the process. We've seen the Knicks do this over and over again. We think they're going to rebuild and they push the big red button and try to make a big splash. That's not what they need to do. So I'm not necessarily sure why the Knicks would be interested in going after a guy like Zach LaVine, but, you know, it's a CAA connection between Leon Rose and Zach. So I'm not sure what's going on in there in Madison Square Garden. I think they need to make sure their priorities are straight, which are building through the draft, getting ideally a generational type point guard to lead you into the future and really developing these guys. But for the Nets, it makes sense on some level because you need a true third option who can go out there and get you buckets when other guys can't. And we're like I said, we're waiting to see if that can be Caris LeVert. But if not, Zach LaVine isn't that bad of a backup.
Christian, one of your colleagues in the Daily News indicated that now Tom Thibodeau seems to be the second choice for the Knicks in this rotating scenario of who wants to be the Knicks coach. And now Jason Kidd has moved up. What have you heard about Kidd during his Nets days? Because for me, as a stepping away from talk show host being Knicks fan, I have a lot of respect for Jason Kidd. Had a chance to cover him when he was in Jersey and had a phenomenal run with the Nets. But it just seems as a head coach with the Nets and then with Milwaukee, he's become like the new Larry Brown. Like he never stays anyplace. So I'm just curious as to, and I don't know why he's not staying, but let's take his time up with Brooklyn. I know you didn't cover him. Well, you weren't covering the Nets at that time, but let's talk about him and his coaching time in Brooklyn.
You know, it's funny because when Jason Kidd was coaching the Nets, I was a junior in college trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life. You know, when you look at Jason Kidd and the situation as to why the Knicks would want to sign him, I think I wrote on this not too long ago. Mm-hmm. They're hoping that Jason Kidd is a guy who's going to be able to attract some type of star, right? Because if you look at Jason Kidd's track record, he wasn't able to really get too many wins in Milwaukee, and then we see what the Bucks have been able to do with Mike Budenholzer at the helm. And obviously, that's not fair. The Bucks have added some talent alongside Giannis. Mm-hmm. But I hope my hope would be that the Knicks aren't going for Jason Kidd in hopes of prying Giannis from Milwaukee, because that's, if you ask me, I don't think that's a smart idea. If Giannis is going to leave the Bucks because they're not winning at a championship level, why would he go to a team that's not winning at a playoff level, let alone below that? I'm not so sure that that's a smart move for the Knicks. But at the end of the day, they need a new voice. They need a fresh face in there. They need somebody who, and if you think about the Knicks, last time we saw really Jason Kidd play some high level basketball, he was at Madison Square Garden and in the Knicks in one of their last, you know, real glory days before they started the downward spiral. So I'm not so sure that this is, I wouldn't say it's real, right? I don't think that Jason Kidd is the guy that should be hired. I think it'd be interesting to see them do that. I am a proponent of them going to get a guy like Kenny Atkinson or going to get a guy like Tom Thibodeau, guys that we've seen with a track record of developing players and leading them to where they, like we saw with Tom Thibodeau. He turned Derrick Rose into an MVP candidate. We saw Kenny Atkinson turn D'Angelo Russell into an all-star. And you could also make the case that we saw Jason Kidd help develop Giannis Antetokounmpo into the player that he is today. So I guess I do see a little bit of development in each one of these guys. But at the end of the day, you look at Jason Kidd's track record as a head coach, 183 and 190. I just haven't seen anything sensationally special about him as a coach. Loved him as a player. As a coach, I'm not so sure that's the guy that I would want to lead my team into the future when you have these other options on the table. But as we've seen, Leon Rose is going to take his time in this process. And for the NBA is just a better place when the Knicks are good and when they're relevant, and I really hope they can get this one right.
Last thing, Christian. Season for the Nets, their restart begins a week from today. They have Orlando. Here's their schedule for the 8 games. Orlando, Washington, Milwaukee, Boston, Sacramento, the Clippers, Orlando, Portland. Can they make the playoffs? Can they get the 8th seed? Or can they hold to the 7th seed? Which is the more likely scenario?
I think they fall to the 8th seed, but they don't fall outside the playoffs. I don't even think they fall into a play-in tournament, because when you look at how bad the Wizards project to be with no Bradley Beal, with no Davis Bertans, I'm just not sure that the Nets can lose enough games and the Wizards can lose enough games or can win enough games to force it, seeing as though the Wizards are 6 games out of the playoff picture. So I think they stay in the playoff picture. I think they fall to 8th and they lose in either 4 or 5 to the Bucks. And I think that's really all you can ask for this Nets team. They're shorthanded beyond belief. And the schedule, I don't even think they can get 3 wins coming up into this 8-game stretch. So we'll see what they're able to do out there. But it's tough. It's a tough ask.
No question about it. Christian Winfield, we'll continue to read you. Keep us up to date on what's going on with the Nets. We'll talk soon, my friend.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
My pleasure. Christian Winfield.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
And you know, Greeny is as big a Jets fan as anyone I know. I remember having conversations with him when Mark Sanchez was drafted. Larry, how's my guy Mark Sanchez doing? And so we would talk, and so he is passionate about the Jets. Here's what he had to say that he felt was the best way to handle the situation with Jamal Adams on the Michael Kay Show today.
A lot of my friends are sending me notes saying, that's it, I'm done with Jamal, get rid of him, trade him, get whatever you can for him. But in my view, much of what he's saying, even if it isn't 100% accurate, is very difficult to rebut. There are a lot of people around the sport that I've talked to who were underwhelmed, let's put it that way, with Woody Johnson's response to these very significant charges. To reply with what was on Twitter, a legalese, sort of bloodless, emotionless response that suggested he thought that would just make it go away. I don't think it's going away. The Joe Douglas piece of it, obviously, I'm not privy to. So if the Jets categorically deny it, I will take them at their word. But really the part of it that bothers me the most is the Adam Gase part of it, because on that, I think he's 100% right. And I would ask any Jet fans to just, in a moment of intellectual honesty, ask yourself this question. Do you genuinely believe the next time the Jets achieve something of great success that Adam Gase is going to be their coach? The leadership questions that surrounded him before he came are exactly what Jamal Adams is talking about. This is the kind of thing that usually people in a locker room don't make public until they're in the position that Jamal is, where he can say whatever he wants, because at the end of the day, he fears no retribution, because if they get rid of him, then he's getting exactly what he wants. So that's the part of it that bothers me the most. And I think that he has backed them into the kind of corner now that they really may have no choice but to find some way to get him out of there, because I think he's shown he won't stop until they do.
And that's the interesting scenario here. What do the Jets do? Because if you trade him, once again, you got to get worth. You can't just give a talent like Jamal Adams away. Okay, if you're not going to pay him, then you got to trade him. All right? But you can't trade him now because you're not going to get value. You have to wait till the end of the season right now. And hopefully, the two of you will have a conversation. Or who knows, perhaps time heals and during the season, they'll have a conversation and they'll be able to move on, and maybe he'll end up in the scenario where it stays. But as of right now, if you are asking me how I feel this is going to go, as of right now, I'd have to say that at the end of this season, Jamal Adams will not be a Jet. Let's go ahead to the phones. 1-800-919-3776. Chris is in Manhattan. Hey, Chris, you're next on 98.7.
Hey, how you doing, Larry?
I'm all right, Chris. What's going on?
Not too much, you know. They've been taking a time out, man, but been doing a lot of ear hustling. Mm-hmm. You and Trey have been holding it down, everybody else. Buddha had me crying the other night when he was talking about they're going to ruin Sam Darnold. So it's good to talk to you. Thank you for everything that you do. I guess what would we like to get to first? What's the biggest problem? Because you know, and I was saying this really sarcastically to Kyrie. It's funny how nobody's talking about how we need another quarterback. We need Justin Fields. Get this guy. You know why? Because quarterback is actually not your problem. It's going to be the stuff that masks your problem. And you got to start with, to me, Jamal Adams right now is on the back. He's on the back burner. What is going on with the ownership? Mm-hmm. That was, and again, I've gone dark. I haven't read. I didn't read Manisha's article. I've turned a lot of things off. But just from where I've been sitting and just listening from far away, okay, what's going on with the ownership? This stuff with Woody Johnson is going to get very, very interesting. Mm-hmm. How would that affect Joe Douglas? Hopefully, it doesn't. To me, Joe Douglas also. Okay, they'll say that his name has come up with Jamal Adams. I'm good with Joe Douglas. I don't hear Greg Williams' name either. Mm-hmm. Names that I am hearing, okay, again, Johnson's ownership. Okay, you're talking about after that, before I get to Jamal Adams, it's got to be heavy on Adam Gase.
Always.
off the field. And I said this to Kyrie and Trey, who, thank you, Trey, because he actually put me on to, you know, that you were going to be on at this earlier hour. Does aloof come to the, that word aloof come to mind when you think of, if you were going to use one word to describe Adam Gase, you know, good or bad? It just seems like he's aloof, you know, in terms
yeah.
of...
I would agree with that.
His relationship, to players, and I guess that's off the field, and this is mainly in a leadership role. And Kyrie says something about him deferring to Greg Williams in terms of taking care of team issues. In some ways, I can understand that, because if you have a great assistant with you, they'll be, think about it like this. Belichick was a great assistant to, mm-hmm. to Parcells. You'll counter by saying, well, Chris, he didn't leave it to Belichick to handle team issues. And you know that when it came down to the bottom line, you knew who was the man who was going to, who was going to make the call. Gase doesn't strike me as that type of leader, mm-hmm. In terms of being an offensive genius. I don't care how you feel about running backs. Don't sit up here and tell me that you can't use one of the... That's like you telling me, Chris, you got Akeem Olajuwon. How come you can't get him 15 points a game? Yeah, but yo, dog, yeah, we shooting. You see my man over here, I got Vernon Maxwell shooting threes. I got,
come I got Robert Horry. What I got?
I might be doing the Mike D'Antoni style. I got Jeremy Lin on here, baby. I want to run and gun. You're like, are you kidding me?
Yep.
So that's one of the things that I definitely look at. And Kyle Shanahan is just, I mean, because I would figure as an offensive coordinator, mm-hmm. it's much sexier, okay, to show how you can use the passing game as opposed to the pedestrian running game. Mm-hmm. But Kyle Shanahan got no problem with that. That's what I keep looking at with Adam Gase. Then we'll talk about game planning. You're real good with them first 15 plays.
Outstanding.
You know, what happens after that?
I don't know.
Okay, so now if we don't know, and guess what? I don't have a problem with. Remember when special teams was a problem?
Yeah.
When we used to talk, Brent Boyer solved that, right?
That's right.
Yeah, Greg Williams did a great job last point, year. Right?
Yep.
So a lot of this, again, in terms of offensively and as a head coach, a lot is on Adam Gase. When you start looking at how the team has been constructed, and that's not really going to be on, hey, you're still going to need edge rushers. We still have to see who emerges, in the two corner spots, mm-hmm. And then the retooled offensive line. Now, Jamal Adams, would love to have him here. He grew with us. It's like mm-hmm. you kind of made your name with us, But I'm going to tell you something out here. If you make it hard for me to trade you and you make me look bad out here, guess what? I'm going to show you what selfish is really like. Mm. And basically it's going to be like this. You're going to play or you're going to sit out. When you sit out, you get fined, whatever. If it counts against. But guess what? Keep talking. I want you to keep talking and devaluing yourself, because unless I'm getting a one, and I'm greedy. I want, you're that guy, right? So you're supposed to fetch me 2 1. So you know what you're going to do? You're going to zip of that lip, and you're going to be that all pro, so that maybe by the trade deadline, if you really still want to go, and we can't come to grips on how much money. I'd like to give you about 16-6, 16. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you'd be the highest, at 17-5. Especially with the cap, we don't know where it's mm-hmm. going to be. But that's where I'm at with Jamal Adams. I mean, again, I love Jamal Adams. Yep. Would love to have him here. But I think you're going to need, and I understand, he's getting his story out here, but you're going to have to understand from my perspective, that now you're devaluing
You're devaluing yourself. That's what you're doing.
Yes.
You're devaluing yourself.
Because to me, I don't care what another team, you know, I mean, to a certain extent, what another team, oh, are we getting, that's your problem once you know, once the deal is done. Mm-hmm. But I need to get what I want out of it. Since we've been selfish, we gonna look out for ourselves. Look, dog, you don't get me two number ones. Otherwise, you might need to settle up for about 4 years.
Well, here's the thing, Chris, and thanks for the phone call. Here's the bottom line. You're not being selfish. That's your job as the general manager of the team. If you have an asset that other people want, then you have to make sure that you get the right amount of talent in exchange for that asset, be it draft choices, be it a player that can start on your team now in the position that you need, some combination of the two. That's your job as general manager. Okay, that's what you're supposed to do. You can't just give away talent and don't get anything in return. So that's why I preface that by saying, hey, this is what has to be done. Right now, he's got to play this year. And if he continues to play at the caliber that he played last year as an all-pro, and then at the end of this, who knows what happens during the season? Maybe they sit down and talk and they have a conversation and everything is okay. Or maybe they turn around and everything is not okay, but at least he will have brought his value back up. Because right now, if I'm an opposing general manager, there's no way I'm giving you what he is worth. Because I think you really have to get rid of him. Because you may think I got to get him out of my locker room. Because in this short season, he could be a distraction every single game. I don't know what he's going to do. And that means I'm not getting equal value. And if I'm not getting equal value, guess what? I can't send him anywhere.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.